You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. Barely a day goes by without there being a story regarding mental health. One survey suggests there are 10 million people who need support for their mental health as a direct result of the pandemic. Another survey said that one in five young people were diagnosed with a probable mental health condition in 2023. Local churches are, of course, designed to be caring communities. Christians are not immune to mental health challenges, and with many having nowhere to turn, church communities can provide a welcome to those outside the church facing this challenge. But this is a complex area, and as the saying goes, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So what can a Christian in leadership do to understand, help, and support those that they lead who are facing mental health issues? Well, today I'm joined by the youth and student coordinator at a charity that was set up to support those with mental and emotional health challenges. The charity is Kintsugi Hope, and my guest is Joe Harris. So welcome, Joe, to the Leadership Show.
Hello.
Great to have you along. For those not aware, the name Kintsugi, I understand, was chosen because it is the Japanese art of mending broken pots with golden glue, and thus the breaks become the features of its beauty. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. Yeah. So in Japan, if they break a pot, usually they'd put gold powder in the glue and make a feature of the cracks. Whereas here in the UK, we might super glue it back together to hide the cracks. Or if we're really honest, we'd probably chuck it in the bin, wouldn't we? But yes. In Japan, they put gold powder in the glue and they make a feature of the cracks. And the whole idea of this is that pot has gone through a brokenness, that pot has gone through something, yet the cracks don't mean it's ugly, the scars don't mean ugly, it's actually beautiful because of what it's gone through. And our whole idea is this, is if we're honest, in life, we're all going to pick up scars. We're all going to get a bit bumped, we're going to get a bit bruised. And those bruises, those scars aren't things we should be ashamed of, actually they make us who we are. Let's find the gold within our scars and let's find the beauty within it.
That's a lovely idea. How did you come yourself to be involved in the charity, John?
Yeah, sure. So I had left school and I was looking for a thing to do, something to do for a year, an internship. And I came across this through a family friend of Patrick, was looking for an intern to do some stuff with youth. And I did the internship. And as often it goes with internships, I'm now nearly 5 years in and still not left. So I started as a year and just kept going.
Well, I'm sure that's a commendation to your contribution to the charity as well. So fabulous. So in my introduction, I alluded to the fears that many have when it comes to seeking support, those reporting mental health issues. Obviously, it can be a scary thing. People's lives are complex. Mental illness, of course, ranges from feeling anxious ahead of an exam to psychotic disorders. So perhaps you could outline the kind of range for us and the kind of work that you do where your space is involved.
Yeah, of course. Whenever we speak about mental health, I think the best thing to speak about is this thing called the mental health continuum. Mm. If you're listening, just give a good Google search and you'll see some images come up. So mental health continuum is a two-way axis. So you have a horizontal axis and you have a vertical axis. And now the horizontal axis is mental well-being. So all of us have well-being. And it can be positive and it can be negative. And actually, that's on a sliding scale. It's not you either got good well-being or bad well-being. It's a full scale. And that scale, where you are on that scale, changes every moment. Actually, you could be having a great day and then you step in a puddle. That's a very, very loose analogy, but that sort of thing. And then you have a horizontal axis, and that is a mental health disorder. Now, that is high functioning anxiety. That is disorders that we would know of, and they go across. And actually, at all times, everyone is on somewhere on this four axis. So it could mean you could have zero diagnosis and a positive well-being, and you're on the top right axis. Or you have you could be in a place where you have a very serious diagnosis and a very negative well-being at the same time in your bottom left axis. But what this mental continuum does is it does a couple of things. One, it allows us to go, everyone's on this axis, so we've all got something to talk about. It gives validation to those people, and especially we find this with young people, who are struggling with their well-being but don't have a diagnosis. I'm not sure about you, but sometimes you might be, I'm really worried about that thing, I'm feeling really low at the moment, but I've not got depression, so I can't complain. Actually, no, you've still got a poor well-being. There's something you can talk about there. But it also gives hope that you have a serious diagnosis, but with the right help, the right medication, maybe with the right coping mechanisms, you can still have a positive well-being. So this mental continuum gives hope that a diagnosis isn't a life sentence, but it also gives validation for people who don't have a diagnosis who are struggling. And at Kintsugi, our main thing we do is we run Kintsugi well-being groups. These well-being groups are kind of like Weight Watchers or Alcoholics Anonymous before your mental health. And in those groups, you'd have people who have good, positive well-being and no diagnosis. They would be in that group. You'd have people who would have a serious diagnosis but positive well-being. And you'd also have the people who have poor well-being but no diagnosis. Those three are usually people who'd come to our groups. We say if you've got a serious diagnosis and your well-being is poor, actually, we're not professionals. These groups aren't for us. They aren't for you. There's help you need, and we aren't the ones who'll be able to give it to you. So we would signpost to somewhere else. But for most people, these groups would be perfect for.
Now, that's enormously helpful, Joel. Thank you. And it's worth perhaps flagging up that the NHS Specialist Services, plus Special Resources via Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, CAMHS, are very stretched. They have waiting lists depending on which local authority you're with, sometimes over a year, 2 years. So obviously parents, carers and adults have significant challenges to face. So they've got to help the person who's going through it without necessarily having a diagnosis, as you just alerted. So it's a challenging time, and what you're doing is going to be helpful and valuable in that space.
Yeah, no, 100%. It is true. There's waiting lists across the country are awful. And actually, when you're a young person, you're struggling to be told most of the time, to be told you're not ill enough for us to be able to help you is an awful thing.
Yeah.
And that's where these well-being groups, we would say, come in. Actually, these are for the young people who are struggling but aren't seriously ill enough to get through CAMHS, but actually need some help. And what we would say these groups are for people who are waiting, who actually aren't ill enough. And I hate that phrase, but that's what we hear often being told to our young people. These groups be for them, but also our saying is let's get everyone through these groups. So we give them coping mechanisms, we give them strategies to help their well-being. So when their mental health does get poor, and statistically we see a lot of young people's mental health is getting poor, they know how to help themselves. So there's not as many people queuing for CAMHS. So the people who seriously need CAMHS can get through the queue because a lot of other people will be given tools and coping mechanisms to be able to help themselves and their friends.
So, Joe, what's the biggest mistake people make when it comes to mental health in young people?
I think the biggest mistake is, I would say personally, is either going, that's just hormones, you'll get over it, or the complete opposite spectrum and going, you're seriously ill and we need to really do some stuff. I think both can have a negative effect, but also both of them can be true. So I'm not going to stand here and go, actually, all teenagers' actions are because of mental health issues and not because of hormones. That's not true. And we all know that. We all know when you go through teenage years, your hormones are all over the place. And actually, that can mean teenagers do some very stupid and silly stuff. And also, there is one in six young people who are believed to have a serious diagnosis. So there are young people who have a diagnosis. But I think what we often want to do is either characterize young people into either of those camps. Either you are just going through hormones, get over it, it's fine, everyone goes through it, or you're seriously ill, let's try and work out what we can do. I think there's a middle ground where we need to sit in often and go, hey, yeah, you might have some hormones going crazy at the moment, but actually you've got really poor well-being. What can we do to support you in that? How can we help you in that? And vice versa, yeah, you're really struggling, but actually if we look at mental continuum, you might not have a diagnosis, but you might have a diagnosis. So let's go and get you to the GP and let's get you checked out. But also, what stuff can we do to help you understand what you're going through might not be a mental health illness, but might be a poor well-being. So I think we need to sit in that middle ground where we do go to the GP, we do make that a practice, we do go, hey, actually, these people are struggling, what do you suggest? And also, we validate young people with their feelings and don't just put aside the hormones.
Cool. And Joel, are there simple things that people could do that typically don't do, do you think, when it comes to mental health with young people?
Yeah, I think first is talk about it. But talk about from a place of a personal point of view than a looking down point of view. One thing was different about the generation who are teenagers now than most generations before them is that there's a lot less stigma around mental health. And that's down to social media, down to the rise in mental health, down to awareness and all that sort of stuff. But actually, if you go 30 plus, you see, and it gets more and more, it seemingly is, more and more stigma around it. Because when they grew up, that wasn't going on. And that's the society they lived in. So often we can find, when you speak to young people, you go, so you're struggling, so what's going on? And it becomes a one-way conversation. A one-way conversation is you're wanting a young person to tell you everything, but you're not open to telling that young person anything about yourself. Actually, a really good way of speaking to a young person is having a two-way conversation. Going, oh, this is what I've struggled with. This is what is going on with me. How are you finding this sort of stuff? How are you finding that? But there's a few caveats to that. If you're telling a young person something you've told nobody else before, you're sharing too much.
Right,
yeah. If you're telling a young person stuff, but actually you don't feel comfortable sharing that, not because of our stigma, but I'm not sure if I should be telling this to a young person, you're probably saying too much. Actually, there are these guidelines that should be put in place. So as an adult, we don't overshare. And as an adult, we don't become burdens to our young people. But once again, there's this middle ground of going, hey, I'm open about this because this is part of my testimony. For example, for me, I have a speech impediment. I'm severely dyslexic. And a year and a half ago, I was signed off work for a bit because of my depression. Now, those things I've spoken about a lot. And those things, to me, right now, I don't have an emotional impact in sharing that to you because I've processed that personally through counselling and through my internal and my private circle people I process with. So I can share that and I can speak about that from a place of going, this is what I went through and how can I help you from that experience, let you be able to feel like you can open up. But I wouldn't share that if I hadn't processed that yet or I hadn't spoken to someone else about it.
Yeah, so you don't want the conversation to be a therapeutic conversation,
no,
because
no,
you're trying to get help yourself. It's from a position of strength or relative strength, having gone through it. That's very enormously helpful. Are there areas that you think are particularly poorly understood as you've ministered in this area?
Yeah, I think if we're looking at it from a Christian perspective, I think the joy of the Lord and the depression is something what's very interesting. Because I think when I thought about this a lot is if you go to church and you're depressed and you have depression, actually you can end up feeling proper guilty about the joy of the Lord.
Yes.
Can't you? Because what we as a church have communicated to some degree is the joy of the Lord is this euphoric happiness where you're walking on clouds and you're not aware of what's going on. And now that isn't the joy of the Lord. We've communicated the joy of the Lord as the emotion happiness. Yet the joy of the Lord isn't an emotion. It's a fruit of the Spirit. It's something we can receive. It's a gift. It's not an emotion. And I think that what needs to be communicated more. For example, the joy of the Lord is the promise that a better day is going to come. The joy of the Lord is a promise that you're a son and daughter of the King. The joy of the Lord is a promise of what Jesus has done and will do, and the security that comes with that. The joy of the Lord isn't feeling happy. If we look at Paul's life, he speaks so much about the joy of the Lord. Yeah, he was whipped. He had shipwrecks. He was in prison. He had all this stuff, and he communicated the struggles of that stuff. So the joy of the Lord isn't a replacement to a poor well-being, or in some cases, it isn't a replacement to depression. The joy of the Lord can run in parallel to having an understanding of what this life is. I can have the joy of the Lord, but actually still be struggling with some emotions because the joy of the Lord is greater and bigger than that. So I think we need to be better at communicating what the joy of the Lord is and what the joy of the Lord isn't, because it can alienate part of the church, because some of the church can't have struggle with the emotion happiness.
No, that's really being, that's helpful, Joel.
You don't want them to feel out of it.
Yeah, no, sure. Joel, within the Christian community, there is, of course, an awareness that the old norms regarding gender and sexuality have changed. I'm just wondering if you're finding this is a real issue with young people that you work with, or whether actually the church has exaggerated it and actually, frankly, it's not such a big deal on the ground, as it were.
Sure. I think whoever you speak to across the UK, people have different closeness or proximity to those issues depending on the young people they're in. Our groups are for everyone, and actually we'll have people across the board come into our groups, and we don't particularly register who that is. So I think there is a issue, and there's a cry for people, for the church to have an understanding of what's going on, have a stance on what's going on. And I think the church is right to speak about it. But I think, like with everything, if we just speak about that, it's too far. And if we don't speak about it at all, it's not enough. Like with mental health, if the church just spoke about mental health, it's speaking too much, I would say.
Yeah.
Because actually the church is wider than that. The church is the body of Christ. The church is about Jesus came down from heaven. He died on the cross. 3 days later, he rose again and he forgave our sins. That's the message of the church. And actually we can communicate to people struggling with mental health through that message. But Jesus is the center of the church, not a mental health issue. It's the center of the church. There's a place for it. There's a place for it. It's not the main thing. Likewise with questions around sexuality and gender, that shouldn't be the full conversation. But if we don't have a conversation at all about it, it's an injustice to a lot of people.
You oversee and look after both young people and student age. I'm just wondering whether there's any difference between, say, a teenager growing up in the family home and someone as a student, whether there are different kinds of challenges in terms of mental health and emotional health?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. It was reported that 50% of all mental health illnesses start at the age of 14 and 75% start before the age of 24.
Okay.
So actually a lot of it we're seeing starting in a younger age group. But what university does is it withdraws rhythms and regularities from young people, and it shifts where they live in. Now, all those things will, to some degree, impact our well-being, because that's normal. if you move house, there's a sense of uncomfortability there. If you're living on your own for the first time, there's a sense of uncomfortability there because it's a new thing. And that's a normal emotion. That should be a right emotion because we're growing up, we're understanding what's going on. But what I think university, the struggle with university is there's nobody telling you what to do. As a young person in the UK, most of the young people are very fortunate to have the rhythms and regularity of school. Year 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you can wake up every day and you know what you're doing. And it's looking very similar. When I was in school, 7 a.m. wake up, 7:30 cereal, 8:30 start walking to school, 8:45 form time, lunchtime, after school club, come home, dinner, club, homework, go to bed. And that's what I'm doing for the next 5 years. That rhythm adds a security. And if you drop out of that rhythm, stuff is put in place for that to be flagged and to work out what's going on. Now, that doesn't always work, and not all of our young people are in that. So I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying, as a sweeping statement, everyone's in that, it's good for everyone. But what I'm saying is there's a regularity there, what a lot of young people benefit from. University, no one's telling you to come to a lecture, and you don't have to always do stuff, and there's no regularity. There's nobody stopping you from waking up at 2 p.m. and going to bed at 4 a.m. And that's where I think is a difference with our young people to students, is sometimes what students are struggling with is suddenly for the first time ever having a lack of authority. So they've got to have their own, build their own rhythms and routines. And if you're struggling with your mental health, if you're listening to this and you struggle with mental health, you will know how hard it is to be self-motivated to do anything like that when you're low. So actually, if you're going to uni and you're struggling, suddenly having to motivate yourself to get out of bed before midday, having to motivate yourself to go and watch lectures or be at lectures, having to motivate yourself to eat healthily, to exercise, to all that stuff, is really hard if you're struggling. I think that might be where the difference is.
Thank you. As we come to a close, Joel, talk a little bit about the resources that Kintsugi Hope offer. And of course, Pratchett Regan's on tour. Something called Brighter Days. So maybe you could share a little bit of that as well.
So Kintsugi Hope's primary resources we have is our wellbeing groups. Now, our wellbeing groups have an adult version, a student version, and a youth version. These are youth and students is 6 weeks, adults is 12 weeks, and they're run through a partner organisation. A partner organisation is a church or Christian organisation. And the idea is to gather 12 people together to equip them to look after their own mental health and the mental health of their friends. It's very simple. It's very practical. How can we as Christians tangibly give something and help you guys? And how can we help ourselves? You can find all the information about that on our website at kintsugihope.com. And then Brighter Days Tour. So Brighter Days is Patrick's new book, 12 Steps to Wellbeing. And the tour just unpacks the themes of that book. And there's live music and there's a chat show sort of vibe. It's a good laugh and actually a really good thing. Where you could bring people of no faith and all faith to.
Fabulous, good. Well, thank you so much for all that you're doing to stand in this very important space for young people and children who would otherwise be struggling big time. And certainly local churches would be, would often be wondering where to go. And there's organisations like you. So thank you, Joel, for all that you've shared today.
Well, thank you very much.
It was lovely to chat with Joel Harris, who's the Youth and Student Coordinator with Kintsugi Hope. If you're wondering about the spelling of Kintsugi, it's Kintsugi, and the website kintsugihope.com. And you can find out more about the things that they offer and maybe connect as a church with that particular charity. I hope the conversation gave you some pointers to engaging in this whole area. I especially know that young people are typically more open than maybe older generations. So it may be a little easier being aware of safeguarding concerns. It may be a little easier for you to have a chat with someone who's a young person, talk about their mental health. That would be okay, I'm sure. There's a lot of ill-informed nonsense spoken about mental health and Christian faith. Joel referenced the Apostle Paul, and certainly he shares in his letters some of his ups and downs. And of course, the Bible itself, Job, Elijah, Jeremiah, all faced real challenges. David in the Psalms, of course, was battling with ups and downs while still looking to God, and expresses those in the Psalms, which the people of God down through the centuries have found so wonderfully helpful. So if you're battling yourself, don't despair and don't feel like God's forgotten you. If you do need to chat with someone, then Premier's Lifeline, you can call 0300 111 0101 Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and there'll be someone happy to listen to you and maybe to refer you to other services should you need more in-depth counselling or support. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for your company, looking forward to the next time, and praying blessing upon you as you seek to serve God wherever he's placed you. Remind you now of the words of the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 9 verse 8, and God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. May that be your experience. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.